Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/Watson Assistant.
Whether you're a fan of bourbon, scotch, tequila, rum, gin, whatever it is, VSLiquor.com has you covered. And here's the best part. Don't leave your home. VSLiquor.com is the most reliable alcohol delivery there is. Make sure to type in the code SPORTS when you check out, and you'll get 15% off your initial order. VSLiquor.com, proud partner of the Sliwa Show. Daniel, appreciate you calling in. You're on the Sliwa Show. Go ahead, bud.
Hey, Alan Sliwa, I just wanted to say that I really appreciate your station and the way that you guys have, like, opened up, even back to the Kobe stuff, and then, like, the night that NBA kind of shut down when Rudy Gobert
tested positive,
and you know, I had called in and I talked to you about how one life can impact so many and could make such a big difference. Well, here we are kind of seeing the opposite end of that spectrum with, you know, here's George Floyd, and he's, you know, the impression that he's made on the world in literally 9 minutes of torture. You know, and so it's just the impact and the irreplaceability of one life is really, really important. And I think, you know, in this culture that we kind of see ourselves in, you know, you look at, you know, the NBA wants to come to play games, and, you know, their players are a little scared. They got friends and family in their life that maybe can't handle, you know, a COVID, you know, disease or whatever. So, you know, this is a time when everybody needs to take a deep breath, you know, think about what they're doing, where they're going, who they're impacting. And I think that the illness itself has given us a little bit of time to do that. Our kids, today's the last day of school for my kids, and our kids are, you know, facing summertime with, you know, social distancing. You know, what does that look like? You know, so we all are kind of facing this bigger picture of looking at what our impact is in life. And then I also have something else that I'd like you to bring up to Mason in Ireland, if you have a
before you go into that, Daniel. So let me say this, by the way, greatly put, you know, you know, I think there's an awareness that we can all have. Look, I can only speak for myself, right? So usually we just see things through our lens. I could be better, you know, and I'm sure there's many people out there that we'll use Drew Brees as an example. Drew Brees has got demolished on social media, on the news, on sports radio stations over the last 24 hours, right?
He's a great guy.
and let me say this, and I think Drew Brees woke up today like him thinking he knew how he can be, you know, how he's trying to see things from somebody else's vision. No, you're not. Drew, you were just looking at it from your perspective.
Yep.
If you still thought after all these years that's why Colin Kaepernick was kneeling, and I was mentioning this on Mason Island, he's not the only one that feels that way. But that just kind of shows you certain things sometimes happen in life, and if it raises awareness towards, you know, better – maybe what happened to Drew Brees on accident actually becomes a really good thing, because a lot more people are more educated on the topic, or they're more sensitive. But you mentioned something about George Floyd, and I don't know if, you know, this was I don't know if this was just kind of what took it over the top, but, you know, it's Eric Garner as well. It's Michael Brown. It's Freddie Gray. Yes. It's Alton Sterling. Is, you know, we can Breonna Taylor. There's a number of different individuals that, you know, obviously, unfortunately, lost their lives and they shouldn't have. And this is where we are today. And you made a great point, so I didn't want to go just off of that. All right, now to Mason and Ireland. Let's hear it.
No, so here's the thing: if I can create a little bit of goodwill for the players and for the managers or the team owners for baseball, I think that there's a way forward here. And I think it really comes down to this. If the players are willing to play, you just have a default where they play this year and they automatically get this year's salary moved to the back of their contract, and just have it be a player's option. If they want to stay with that team for another year at the money they had agreed upon for this year, they get that in, you know, in just put right there at the back of their contract, whether they're front-loaded or back-loaded in their contract, it would make a huge difference of saying, hey, we understand you lost. We're losing, you know, the team owners, you know, this is what we can do. And just that we don't even have to get, you know, agents or renegotiate or just hear, this is like a golden ticket. You know, we understand everybody's losing this year, but in exchange for playing this year, we want to offer you this.
Daniel, I appreciate you calling into the show, and I will say this. This is my thoughts on baseball. Good ideas doesn't sound like those go with Major League. If you have a good idea, Major League Baseball wants you to hold it to yourself because so far no one's offering any good ideas or trying to figure out how to make this thing work. It's not a bad idea, Dan. You know what it reminds me of? It reminds me a little bit of when COVID-19 started there. If you own a home, and I don't know what banks were doing this, then let's say you didn't pay for 3 months. Those 3 months, you just got added three more payments at the end of your loan. So if it's a 30-year loan and you're 15 years in, it's going to get added 15 years and 3 months, something along those lines. There are solutions to making this work for baseball. But what you have to do is you have to put greed on the side and you have to put ego on the side. And you have to do things that you feel like are right. And you have to, you know, your product is only where it is simply because of fans. Your team is only worth the billions it's worth is because of your fans. If you ignore your fans, if you decide you don't want to pay any attention to your fans, which it looks like that's exactly what Major League Baseball is doing right now, how do you not think that's going to come back and haunt you? If I'm running a restaurant right now and you don't like the food at my restaurant, but it's you that built that restaurant, it's you that, you know, been coming in for years, bringing in friends, more people know about it, you're sitting at the bar, whatever the case is, and you start saying, hey, I'm not sure if I'm crazy about the food, and I look at you square in the eyes and say, well, I don't care. How do you think that restaurant's going to do? How do you think it's going to do? Of course it's going to suffer. Of course it's not going to do well. That's how I feel Major League Baseball is treating fans right now. They're treating their fans of, well, we'll figure this thing out. And if you're involved in it by the time we get there in July, then great. But you know what? If we decide not to have baseball for probably it would be a total of 17 months, then hey, you know, is what it is. We'll see you when we come back. That's the sport that you want to support? No, thank you. I hope I'm wrong. I hope they figure it out. But I feel like I've been having the same conversation for the last month and a half, 2 months. Last month and a half, 2 months, I feel like this is all I've been talking about was how baseball can't be this stupid. And every day that goes by, I'm like, nope, they actually can be that stupid. And they are proving it on a daily basis. By the way, Tyler Kepner, national baseball writer for the New York Times, as baseball squabbles over money, it risks disastrous outcome. He's coming up at 8:30, so we'll continue this baseball conversation. But I do want to a couple things that I want to hit on. I saw something on social media maybe about 15 minutes ago. And if you go on Twitter, it's impossible that it's not there. And these are some of the things that, man, I can't tell you, just make me absolutely sick to my stomach. And it's why these protests are going on. When we come back, we'll talk about it. First off, I just want to also, just a quick reminder, 710 ESPN wants to salute all of our frontline workers as part of our Thank You Thursdays presented by Valvoline Instant Oil Change. If you know someone who is working as a healthcare provider, a firefighter, EMS worker, or a food service professional, nominate him or her today. Here's how you do it. Email the station, ESPNLAMarketing@ESPN.com. with your first and last name, city, and occupation, or post a short video on Instagram or Twitter and include hashtag 710 Thank You Thursdays. Every Thursday, we'll interview a frontline worker and award them a $500 thank you gift to include a $200 service to Valvoline Instant Oil Change, $100 gift card to Wingstop, VSLiquor.com, and Shuteria.com. Stay right here. This is the Sliwa Show on 710 ESPN. So if there's one thing that's happened over the last week or so, one of the main things that's happened over the last week or so is think about all the videos that go up on Twitter and go up on Instagram. All right. Some of them are beautiful. Some of them just make you absolutely sick to your stomach. And I don't know if you've been on Twitter, you know, obviously lately or whatever the case is, but there's one tweet going on right now, just, you know, obviously completely as viral as it gets. Everybody is retweeting it. And it's showing exactly one of the main reasons why we have the issue that we have and why there's these protests going on. So Dave Begnad, I'm going to read off, this is coming from at News for Buffalo, had reported, Buffalo's police commissioner orders immediate internal affairs investigation into this incident. Two officers shoving an elderly man who's walking up to them to the ground. At News for Buffalo reports a man suffered a laceration and possible concussion. All right. If you haven't seen the video, we've been seeing a lot of these videos over the last couple of days. And I can only speak for myself, but when we say raise awareness, right, this is raising an incredible amount of awareness towards me as well. You know the one thing I don't understand? And no, I'm not one to think that every police officer out there is a bad person. I don't believe that. I genuinely don't believe that. I know there's a lot of good. But some of these videos that go up, one of the things I have such a difficult time understanding, and I think this is part of the whole your learning and you know, body cams and everybody having cameras, this allows for more, I don't know if trust, honesty is the right, is that the right word, or is it transparency? But whatever the case is, you see a lot of these videos go up. One of the things that I think is beautiful about protests is in a lot of these protests, it's the ability to raise awareness towards a subject that maybe a lot of people don't know about. I don't think the change that's going on right now happens without these protests. Okay, so if George Floyd, who got murdered in broad daylight by a police officer, that's obviously not a police officer that is trying to serve local citizens, right? That's obviously not a police officer that had it in his mind, when there's wrong and bad, I'm there to do right. And when I look at these protests, one of the things that is always a highlight to me, we talked about this yesterday on the show, if you want change, this is what we can do in our country. You can have these protests. You can raise the awareness. You can put pressure on politicians. You could put pressure on city attorneys. You could put pressure on mayors. There's things you could do that come out of the result of a protest. Of course, anybody that's looting, anybody that's causing any violence, any of these protesters that are doing that, which is a very, I'm assuming, a very minimal percentage. Okay, that's wrong. We can decipher right from wrong. There's been videos that have gone out that show that, and those who do wrong, you know, should be there should be they should 100% be in a position where they're at fault for it, so they deserve whatever comes with it. But man, I can't tell you how many of these that I see with police officers and this just the footage and the videos. Where's the unity? That's the one thing I don't understand. That the video that I'm talking about right now that I mentioned in Buffalo, that's the one that everybody's watching on Twitter. How do you feel it's okay to push an elderly man down who's doing literally nothing? Doesn't even look like he understands what's going on. And then you just have a sea of police officers walk by him like nothing while he's bleeding from his head. Okay, so if that camera's not there, then what happens? Those are some of the things that, for me personally, it is crazy, crazy to watch. And maybe this is the norm and I just wasn't exposed to it. I'm starting to be exposed to it now. All right, let me play this. This is Adam Silver, who spoke earlier today. He was on TNT. And with all these social issues going on, Adam Silver, who's one of the most progressive and I think one of the best leaders, not just any of these sports leagues have, but I think any corporation, he's one of the best in the business. NBA's ability to be leading on social issues. Here's Adam Silver.
And I think what also has struck me is that we are such a unique institution, one that all of you, of course, are part of, that I think ultimately may be in a position to have more of an impact on this issue than almost any other organization in the world. I mean, when you think about among the players, coaches, former players like you guys, you know, who are including our ownership now. Within that group, you have some of the most well-known people of color in the entire world. And I think, you know, I've had this conversation with Michelle Roberts just today, who, of course, runs our Players Association, who is also African-American, and saying, let's collectively put our heads together. And I mean, Michelle was the first to say, yeah, but this just can't be more of the same. This isn't about another joint statement from the league and its players. This is a moment in time. And
you know, by the way, you've had a lot of people talk about that, where they feel this is an important moment in American history. We've got a chance to listen to Lakers legend, NBA Hall of Famer Kareem Abdul-Jabbar a few different times. He was on The Jump earlier today, and this is one of the exact points that he was hitting on, that this moment is a it's a special moment in American history.
Well, you know, the problem is I've seen it so many times before. I can go back to when I was in high school, 1964, a young man named James Powell was killed by a police officer named Thomas Gilligan, and Harlem erupted into a riot. I just happened to be there, and it was a terrifying thing. And to see it happening again is really disappointing. Colin Kaepernick demonstrated against this exact issue. And what did he get? He got blackballed, he got fired, and he was ostracized. And that was a peaceful protest. I guess the city of Minneapolis could have done a great job if they had signed him up to be a quarterback and fired a few of their cops before things got to be so ugly.
All right, that's Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. I want to play one more. He's saying that it's already 2020 already a turning point in history. Now we have opportunity to do something about it. Here's Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
It already has been a turning point. Given what has happened with the coronavirus and all this racial violence that we've become aware of, we have an opportunity now that everybody has, it's got everybody's attention. We can do something now. We got everybody concerned and aware that certain things aren't right. We can do something now. We can find a way to hold bad cops accountable. We can find a way to make sure that everybody gets heard, everybody gets the opportunity to vote and have their voice heard politically. This is a good thing for our country. It's not a bad thing. And, I hope people get to understand that and support it.
All right, that's Kareem right there, who was on The Jump with Rachel Nichols. All right, so if you haven't got a chance to go on Twitter, man, I got to be honest, things like that just stick in your mind. They don't sit well, and I guess the only good thing that comes out of something like this is you can expose those who are doing wrong or doing bad, and most definitely we've got a chance to see that over the last couple of weeks. Halftime coming up next. Appreciate you guys tuning in. This is the Sliwa Show on 710 ESPN.
Though we're apart these days, we're sharing more. So at Geico, we'd like to say thanks. Thanks for sharing your savage dance moves. Thanks for sharing your DIY haircut fails. Thanks for sharing your inner lip sync star. Now it's our turn to share with the Geico Give Back, a 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies for current and new customers. Because we're committed for the long haul, the 15% credit lasts your full policy term. Visit geico.com/giveback for more info and eligibility.
Jess, how we doing?
We are good. This California weather is really weird, though. It was like scorching hot
today
yesterday.
Was beautiful.
And today was really nice.
Mm-hmm. Yesterday felt like we were in Vegas or something.
It did.
No,
and
yesterday was
California
brutal.
Bipolar weather.
Yesterday was brutal. But, to be honest, we got the sun. It's starting to feel like summer a little bit. And
there's a chance of rain on Saturday.
Oh, is there really?
Yeah.
But who would have thought? Think about this. What's the date today? June 4th?
We in June already?
NBA Finals would be going on right now.
Oh, man.
And what we found out today was that the NBA Finals will go all the way out into October 12th if they go seven games. What a crazy time in just the world of sports. Just like, from a sports perspective, you could have the NFL, the NBA – Should I even say Major League Baseball, or should I just pretend like the sport doesn't even exist?
Nah.
But you could have
potentially
all these major sports colliding at the same time. And I know, listen, technically October is the World Series for baseball. But still, it's just it's such an interesting time to just hear the NBA saying, yeah, the game 7 could be October 12th. That's crazy to me.
Well, yeah.
Curtis, no, go ahead. Go ahead, Jess.
You know, just think about it. Normally the season, you know, preseason starts like, you know, early October.
Yeah.
Mid-October. So around the time the season ends would have been around the time the season should have actually started.
So Lakers, September 24th, 25th was their media day last year. Maybe it was like September 27th, but it was the last week of September,
yeah, it was,
right?
It
that
was
their
yeah,
media
right
day.
Around then.
Okay, so then maybe a week later they started their preseason games, and then they were one of the first games.
Oh, man, then the whole China thing happened.
That's right. That happened as well. Let me look. I want to look real quick because I just want to look at the date that the Lakers season started. I'm curious. I'm curious to check that. But
it was like
going
October
to be
in the mid-teens. That's my guess.
So October 22nd was when the Lakers season started against the Clippers. They lost that first game against the Clippers, and that's how the season started. So October 22nd. So you're talking about, you know, a completely different structure, but I'm gonna go back to this. And Curtis, you could give me your opinion. You know, what do you want the NBA to do? I mean, here they are making it happen. We actually have some structure. We actually have, you know, we can talk about the standings again and what the format's gonna look like. It's pretty impressive that they got this far, where other leagues obviously have not.
Better have something that's kind of complicated than nothing at all, especially now.
I'll take it all day. And it's almost like a respect to the fans as well that they found a way to make it happen. So, Curtis, why don't you get things started?
All right, fellas. I saw something today that kind of caught my eye as I was scrolling down the timeline.
Well, you can't say it on the radio, bro. You can't say it.
Well, this is the other thing.
Go ahead.
So Paramount is pushing forward with their plans for another Power Rangers reboot.
Okay. Oh, depending on what you say next is going to be depending on whether I'm all in or all out.
Prepare yourself, Jesse. Prepare yourself. So are you guys familiar? You guys are familiar with Back to the Future, right? And its mm-hmm. whole plot?
Yes.
This new Power Rangers reboot will include a sort of spin like that. A bunch of modern day Rangers somehow get sent to the past and they try and return to their own time.
Okay.
The interesting part is the time that they're going to be sent back to is in the 1990s.
Oh, okay. Boy. Oh, boy.
And not only that, they will be aided by the original Mighty Morphin Power Rangers.
So, but the original characters.
And actors. The whole cast is returning. Minus Yellow Ranger because she unfortunately passed away in 2001 in a car accident. But every single cast member, including the Green Ranger, is planned to return.
Tommy Oliver.
They're going to team up with the new Rangers. The rumors.
Where are we going?
Finn Wolfhard here. they're going to. So all these actors, Alan, they're probably 40s, 50s now.
Really?
They were teenagers in the 90s. Mm-hmm. You know, it's been.
I'm pretty sure like one of them doesn't even really act anymore.
No.
Like,
yeah, there is one.
The Red Ranger mm-hmm. doesn't act anymore.
But they're going to still be teenagers in this movie. They're going to use de-aging
technology
as they did they used it in Avengers Endgame. I don't know if you saw The Irishman. They kind of used some
de-aging technology. I did see The Irishman.
They used some de-aging technology there with Mr. De Niro, I believe. So they're going to do that. This is their next attempt at hitting the nostalgia for us millennials. Jess?
Yeah. No, thank you.
Yeah. Jess, no, how do you feel specifically on this topic? And then as a broader question, what was your go-to childhood TV show growing up?
So, one.
Discuss.
This is going to be the last time they're going to reboot Power Rangers. Because I thought the last one they remade wasn't too terrible. But they need to stop trying to play middle ground. Because the true people who love Power Rangers from the 90s creation.
Can we just go for a quick second? You really think there's that many people that are still interested in Power Rangers right now?
Alan, every millennial right now.
This is where I'm going to.
Do you guys think there is?
This is where I'm going to with this. Like me and Curtis, there's a nostalgic to the Power Rangers, but that's the problem. You know, they're selling the Power Rangers as a kid show or as a tweener show. If I want to see Power Rangers
to adults,
yes, I want to see the next level. Show me what happens when they're in the future. A couple years ago, someone made like an edgy Power Rangers theme that was amazing, and I want
to see. Let me say. So this is where I get lost on some of this stuff, because let's use me for an example.
Alan,
I was
kind of
look
like Zordon, by the way.
I'll take.
Oh my god, he kind of does.
If he's athletic, then
he's just a floating head.
It's a big bald head.
But this is the one thing that I don't understand when it comes to any of this. I wasn't a Power Rangers guy, like at all, right? Like, but let's say there was something that you grew up watching. Let's say you grew up Tom and Jerry, right? Let's just use that cartoon, right? Mm-hmm. Or I don't know. I can't think of another cartoon off the top of my head. But whatever it is that you were watching back in the day, there is zero reason to try and recreate it for the same age. You liked it because you were at the age that you were. You know what I mean? Like, it's not going to stick. Like, if somebody – you guys can probably say it better than I can. I'm not a Power Ranger guy at all. I never was. I never watched it. You guys watched it as kids. You're telling me you're going to watch it again as you get older?
Oh, yeah. If someone out there is brave enough to try to reinvent it and to continue and to make
it
work.
But you would watch it – but think about it. What attracted to you back – What attracted you back then was because you were a kid, like you didn't know what was going on. You'd still be interested in that now?
Well, see, look, that's the thing. If you're not trying to build the same show, look, when you watch the original Mighty Morphin Power Rangers from the 90s,
That sounds so funny.
I want someone to take it to the next level.
I haven't heard that comment.
And since you weren't really a Power Rangers guy, there is I mean, looking back at it now, it's a little not strange, but it's like a little off even for a kids show. It's almost got like, you know, those bad kung fu movies kind of feel to it. Everything's mis-lip-synced and awkward fighting kind of stuff sometimes. It's kind of like that. But I think the big issue here is that they're messing with, much like what they did with Star Wars, they're messing with that original cast kind of thing that you grew up with, instead of
that.
Hey, let's do it again for the new age or whatever. They're messing with the original.
Okay,
kind
correct
of thing.
Me if I'm correct me if I'm wrong here. Star Wars wasn't associated with an age, right? Like Star Wars, anyone could like. If you were a kid or you were 60 years old, you could be into Star Wars. Yes or no?
When it came out, I don't think that was originally the case. I think it was marketed to kids or, you know, like early teens, because especially with how, you know, marketing and, you know, franchising like toys, and that's what Star Wars really became known for and how it's powerful today. But I think when it came out, I'm not too sure, but I'm pretty sure it got kind of more as like, you know, kid centric. You know, now it's everyone because it's a global brand, but you know, back then,
that's awesome.
It wasn't targeted to like adults
I'm gonna take out of all this. What did you say? What is it called? What's the full name of Power Rangers?
Mighty Morphin Power Rangers. The Mighty Morphin Power Rangers.
I haven't heard that whole thing in so long that it's just funny. I would have never thought today is when I would hear it. But
I can hear the guitar solo that opens the show now.
We're gonna be coming in with that song next. I just want you to know that.
Jesse, you roll. What do you got?
All right. So I saw something brilliant today. Mm-hmm. CJ McCollum. Yeah, it's a good one. No, you did it. CJ McCollum, one half of the, you know, Blazers dynamic backcourt duo. Mm-hmm. He retweeted something interesting. And something you would not think of him, well, at least not in this time, to retweet. So he retweeted a tweet by @ Ivy Parks PR. It's a picture of Jay-Z and Beyonce, and it says proof that Beyonce cheated on Jay-Z, a thread.
Mm-hmm.
Now, normally that wouldn't catch my attention at all, because I don't really care for that. But the fact that CJ kind of tweeted it, I was like, why? What is he doing retweeting, you know, dumb nonsense like this? Like, I guess that's his way of, you know, just escaping what's going on, right? So I was like, whatever. I checked the thread just out of curiosity. Maybe, you know, for this purpose, maybe this can be something, it's something outrageous and we can talk about it on a halftime. Well, when you click to view the thread, it is about 20 or 30 different sites that talk about social justice issues. There's a petition to sign the for, you know, George Floyd. There's different ways to help you can support Lives Matter, ways to help different, you know, oh, it's like 20 or 30 different links, all threads. And I thought that was the most, one of the most brilliant things ever, because that's a perfect way to really trap someone and get someone who's, you know, not paying attention, or, you know, even kids, maybe someone who's like 16, 17 and follows CJ McCollum and doesn't really pay attention to what's going on. That's
brilliant.
Can see that. And all of a sudden he's informed in one quick fashion of a thread. He can go back and forth from a link. I retweeted it, so not only the people that follow me can see it, but I can go back and, you know, if ever want to find out more about these different people who lost their lives because of, whether it be police brutality or social injustice, whatever it be, it's a good way for you to go and inform. And I've used some of those links, and I donated to some of the causes already on those links. And I just thought that was great.
All right, so I was a couple days ago, I think I saw this. I think I literally saw this exact tweet. So this is from at Ivy Park SPR, proof that Beyonce cheated on Jay-Z, a thread. And I didn't understand what it was. I didn't pay any attention to it. So I just like – I saw it, but I didn't pay any attention to it. Until you just told me right now, I clicked on it. Obviously, you said CJ McCollum retweeted it. So now all of a sudden – if I don't follow this Ivy Parks or whatever the case is, Ivy Parks PR, if I don't follow that, okay, CJ McCollum is going to start hitting the sports world and the sports landscape. What a beautiful thing. First thing, sign the petition, Justice for George Floyd, change.org. Next one, official George Floyd Memorial Fund organized by Philanese Floyd. That's a GoFundMe. And then there's a sign the petition, Darius Stewart, 19-year-old, gunned down, and keeps going. Sign the petition, Marche Jones. It's
ongoing.
Me right now, I had zero idea what you were talking about and where you were going. That's some great stuff. That's some powerful stuff. I'm glad you brought that up as kind of one of the topics, because I definitely did not have any idea that this is what was going on, but. That's a beautiful thread. Definitely a beautiful thread.
I love it too. It's on par with his "I'm trying, Jennifer" tweet. And you know, honestly, the Blazers are becoming one of my favorite, you know, non-Laker teams, because I've always
I just saw something Damian Lillard put out. He was marching, and actually, I don't think it was Dame that put it out. I think it was the NBA that put it out, and he was, you know, out in the streets marching and protesting with everybody else. I mean, look, fellas, I don't want to, you know, beat a dead horse, but I've said this a few times. What the players are doing, I mean, I'm proud. You know, it's like you're proud to see these players understand we got some power. This is our time. Let's do it. You know, as Kareem mentioned in a few of his interviews, history would tell him that maybe nothing will change, because he's been a part of history where moments like this happened. But my hope is, and I think for a lot of other people, they hope that this time it's different.
Yeah, and I'm proud that, you know, we're in the middle of all this, and we get to we see almost every facet from this, you know, whether it's all the athletes protesting and sharing their voice. And I'm just proud that we live in an age where, you know, even if a player doesn't go out and protest for, you know, because if he's just being safe or whatever reason, he can record a video and post it up to Twitter, and it'll get retweeted 10,000, 20,000 times, and he can still share his message, because something, even as small as a video, could mean a lot to someone growing up in their, you know, teens, in their 15, 16, 17. I mean, we talk about it right now, and it's the stuff that we know, but, you know, for the most part, these athletes are inspiring the next generation of people who are going to be activists. You know, we're looking at it right now. We're talking
just
about
youngsters,
this.
You know, just young citizens of our country that, you know, look at these players as if they're – just think about when you were younger.
Role models.
How you looked at – exactly. Think about how you looked at players. And especially now with social, they look at them and what music are they listening to? What's their fashion look like? What are they into? Well, what if a lot of these players now all of a sudden are saying, you know what, don't forget about this date. This is when you vote. Don't forget about this political issue. This is how you can help. This is the way you churn, you know, your society. This is the way that you make change. And these players can be on the forefront of it.
All it takes is one person to, you know, that's one domino to fall. And that person sees this person do it, who inspires this person, who tells this person to do it. And that's all it takes. And that, I think, at the very root of everything that's going on, that's what we're trying to do. It's we're trying to make tell this person to tell that person so we all become aware of it. It's not just, you know, we're doing it for just, but we all need to learn. We all need to educate ourselves and know that this is going on and what we all can do to help. Because, you know, along with solidarity and standing side by side, we need to make sure that we need to know what to do next. It's not just standing in solidarity and saying, we got your back. No, what can we do? You know, actions speak louder than words, and now actions are what needs to be done next.
All right, I want to play off this when we come back, because Snoop Dogg was on Jalen and Jacoby, and he was talking. We know the conversation that Drew Brees was obviously the conversation he had yesterday, and then just kind of transitioned to some of his apology from yesterday and apology today. So let's do that when we come back. We'll make sure to hit on some of these Drew Brees topics, because I know personally I do think that Brees can find a mistake that he made and find a way to correct it. We'll get Snoop Dogg's thoughts on Jalen and Jacoby when we come back. Stay right here. This is the Sliwa Show on 710 ESPN. So we've heard a lot about Drew Brees these last couple of days. You say the last 36 hours or so. And Drew Brees has tried everything he can to, you know, put in his apologies, say he's sorry, say he didn't understand, which actually is kind of, listen, he said today he completely missed the mark. Also put a video out on Instagram, you know, wanted, I think the thought process was he wanted people to look in his eyes and know that he was being genuine. He mentioned that he was, you know, just not educated enough on what's going on. But let me tell you what's crazy to me. What's crazy to me, and look, I grew up in San Diego. Drew Brees was a quarterback for the Chargers back in the days. I got no reason not to like Drew Brees. Drew Brees is a very, very easy player to root for in the NFL. One of the things I always remember is when the Saints won the Super Bowl, and that was right after Hurricane Katrina. And, you know, that was incredible for New Orleans. And he was the foundation of that, you know, one of a number of players that helped do that. And this is kind of the thing that I talk about when I talk about how important sports is, how it could bring people together. That's a perfect example right there, right? And I remember he's holding up his son, and there's confetti just kind of falling. And, you know, his son, he's got the headphones on just because it's so loud there. I was like, man, what a pure moment. What a beautiful moment. Drew Brees is an easy quarterback to root for. What we saw yesterday, those comments that he made, of course there was pressure for him to come out with an apology. Of course, you know, there's an incredible amount of pressure for him to put the pieces back together. You saw teammates of his expressing their hurt, you know, that they felt like, here's somebody that is the leader of the not just the leader of the Saints, but one of the more premier quarterbacks in the NFL. You feel like Drew Brees always doing the right thing in the league. That's a perfect example of somebody who didn't go out of their way to understand the perspective of somebody else. Maybe these last 24 hours, listen. Do I think all of a sudden he learned the world in the last 24 hours? Now all of a sudden he's got every answer? No, I don't. But I think he realized that he made a major, major mistake because he didn't look at Black Lives Matter, or he didn't look at kneeling on, specifically kneeling during the national anthem, what that meant to Colin Kaepernick and the message that he was trying to send out for obviously a few years and still continuing to do it today. He looked at it only from his lens. He didn't look at it from Colin Kaepernick's lens. He didn't look at it from many of those African Americans that are fighting for justice right now. So let me play this. Here's rapper Snoop Dogg. He was on Jalen and Jacoby, and he's talking specifically about Breeze's apology. But one thing that I kind of love from this, he talked about how his teammates will educate him.
I think it was a genuine apology because Drew Brees is one that's known to be a giver. He's been given to that community for a while. He's been a New Orleans Saints. And if you know New Orleans is predominantly black. And he's been contributing with Katrina and a lot of the donations that he's been doing. So I believe he just had misinformation. I don't believe he had the right information on what the cause was about. He was speaking from emotions rather than looking at the whole picture as far as everybody else's emotions. And I believe that apology was genuine, but I believe his players are going to handle him though, because that's a locker room thing. I think the black players on this team going to pull him to the side and give him a real lesson and a real understanding on what it is. So that way he'll have more, understanding on what he's speaking on when he speaks.
All right, so that's Snoop Dogg's perspective. Ireland had some great ideas earlier today that what he would have done, he compared a story to Kobe. Kobe went on a media run, the great late Kobe Bryant, still so freaking weird to say, went on a media run and was on, this was back in the days when he made a slur that was caught on video. He went on, with Stephen A. Smith. He went on with Ireland on the show. He did a TV hit, and he just went on this blitz of saying, okay, I want to make sure that what I said is not how I want to be perceived. So Ireland had a great idea on that. So there was a call that Drew Brees had with his teammates earlier today. Shaquille O'Neal was on that call. Here's Shaq on his thoughts being on the call.
So about 2 weeks ago, I was contacted to speak to the Saints players today. So my speech was about team and unity and something else. Then this happened. So I'm not going to get into it because Coach Payton doesn't really want us to get into it. But I was on the call today when Drew apologized to his teammates. And most of his teammates accepted his apology. They said, Drew, we know your character. We knew you stepped in some stuff that you can't get out of. But guess what? We want you to do more positive things and less talking. And they all said, we accept your apology. I agree with Chuck. He made a mistake.
All right, that's Shaquille O'Neal right there. Again, do I think Drew Brees is an awful person? No. Do I think he is misinformed? He is. And I think there's a lot of us that are also misinformed. So the best we can do is learn from other people's mistakes. That was his mistake, and I'm sure we can all learn a little bit from it. And I'm sure there's many other people. I was mentioning this on Crosstalk. Don't think Drew Brees is the only one that thinks in his mind that Colin Kaepernick was kneeling during the national anthem because he was against supporting the troops or something along those lines. That's not why Colin Kaepernick was kneeling. He obviously had a specific reason, and we're watching it unfold now, years later, police brutality. Not that it ever stopped, but that now it's more on the forefront, and that's what we're seeing. All right. I have talked about baseball at nauseam, and I've talked about how all I'm hoping for, and I'm sure Los Angeles, all they're hoping for, Dodger fans, Angel fans, just fans across the country that support baseball and that appreciate baseball, what they're hoping for is that baseball figures it out. Tyler Kepner, national baseball writer for the New York Times. He's got an article right now in the New York Times. As baseball squabbles over money, it risks disastrous outcome. We'll get his thoughts on everything going on in baseball. Plus, before we end the show, 20 years ago today, the great Kobe Bryant and Shaquille O'Neal connected on an alley-oop that will go down as one of the most important plays in Lakers history. Stay around for that as well. Tyler Kepner, national baseball writer for the New York Times, coming up next. This is the Sliwa Show on 710 ESPN. Welcome back to the Sliwa Show. Very happy to have Tyler Kepner, national baseball writer for the New York Times. Great article right now in the Times. As baseball squabbles over money, it risks disastrous outcome. Tyler, welcome to the show, bud, and thanks for doing this.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Okay, so I know, and I've spent time doing this, and I'm sure, you know, in your case as well, you've looked at baseball, every possible solution, and that's the hope, is that there's a solution that comes to baseball. How bad do you think this could be for baseball if, obviously, a season is not played out and they don't figure out a way to, in what we thought would be COVID-19, that would certainly slow things down. And don't get me wrong, it obviously, it's been a big part to do with what's happening right now in Major League Baseball and sports. But let's say it didn't happen because the two sides couldn't make some type of an agreement. How bad could this be for baseball?
I think it would be disastrous, really, because I think all sports are, and especially baseball, because of the volume of games they sell, 81 home games a year, they rely on people to spend a lot of money to come see the games. I mean, people can say that, you know, the NFL is their favorite or basketball, but, these baseball teams draw, cumulatively a lot more than any other sport. So baseball stands to lose a ton if people have a lot less discretionary income, and if people are scared to go in large crowds. Both of those things seem somewhat likely when we do get back to normal, whatever normal is. So I think baseball's already facing a challenge, and they're just making it so much worse by squabbling about money in the midst of a pandemic when 40 million people are out of work. It's unseemly.
I think it's funny because from a media perspective and a fan perspective, I don't want to say it sounds simple, but that's the way you described it is, I think, how a lot of people feel. It's like, okay, guys, get back to the table, figure this out. Of course, everyone's making adjustments. The world as we know it is going to be different, and hopefully that's not – we'll see what the change looks like a year from now, 2 years from now. But doesn't it feel that way where fans – media, most that, you know, have interest in baseball are saying, okay, we know there's some challenges, but go figure it out. And to this point, it doesn't seem like we're getting any closer. Am I reading that right? Or do you feel, you know what, there's still a great opportunity for baseball to be played within hopefully the next month or two?
Well, there's still an opportunity as long as they haven't canceled anything. But these sides just have so much mistrust or distrust, whatever, on of each other. The union feels like, you know, they've so-called lost a couple of negotiations in a row, or at least ownership has kind of wrested the upper hand from the union. And we remember not so much this past off season, but the last two before that, there were all these fairly loud whispers of collusion, and that the owners are trying to hold down salaries through free agency and stuff. So this is all just an outgrowth of what has become a really tense relationship between these sides. But the problem is the larger issues that we're all dealing with the pandemic and with the unemployment and everything. No one ever likes to hear owners and players fighting over money, but in this atmosphere, it's just so much worse. So is there an opportunity? Sure, there's an opportunity to come back, but I think they're really blowing it because, you know, basketball's got their plan in place, it sounds like, and even if baseball were to somehow come back just before basketball, it wouldn't be for very long. And if they implement this 50-game plan, it will be against players' wishes. And it's just a bad setup, I think.
Tyler Kepner, a national baseball writer for the New York Times, joining the Sliwa Show. Tyler, can you explain? So the owners want less games, as you mentioned, threatening 50 games and haven't even come back with a counteroffer since the players proposed 114 games. Can you, or the union did, can you explain what the thought process is with 50 games from the owners? Why that number?
Okay. Let's just boil it down to the simplest terms here. Without fans in the stands, the owners say that they won't have as much money available to pay the players. Players agreed in March to prorate their salaries based on the number of games played. They thought that was the end of the negotiation. There's a line in there that calls for a you know, a good faith conversation about, you know, the economic feasibility of playing games. And to the owners, they say that that means that we will have a new economic structure if we play games without fans. And the owners think, or the players think, we've already made our concession by being willing to prorate. So if you're going on a prorated basis and you're the players, you want as many games as possible. That's why when the owners proposed 82 games, the players came back and were proposing 114 games. So it went from 82 to 114 to now the owners are saying, well, if you really insist on having prorated salaries, the number we can do that for you is at 50 or thereabouts, roughly. So the owners have now sort of said, well, you know, if you're not going to budge off prorating salaries, which they wanted them to do with a first a 50-50 split and then with a sliding scale of salaries in which the richest players had the biggest pay cuts and the guys making the minimum sacrificed almost nothing. If you're not going to do that, then we'll prorate you, but we're going to do it with as few games as possible to minimize our losses.
Hmm. You know, I was just kind of looking at that in terms of it's just not enough games. I mean, that's the equivalent of around 26 games in the NBA. It's the equivalent of 5 or 6 games in the NFL. I mean, it's just such a small amount of games, that sample size. I mean, how do you, and I know you went into it in your article, can you talk a little bit about how do you really have a season with 50 games? I know from, you know, my standpoint, it doesn't sound like it's enough. Do you share a similar view on it?
I do, and I like what you just came up with there. Beth, I wish I had thought to do that because it's a useful comparison. Because 50, you know, 50 would be a big number for football, obviously. But when you put it in those terms, we're talking about settling the NFL champion after a 5 or 6 game regular season, or the NBA champion after a 26 game regular season. It just doesn't even sound
32% of the season. Yeah, 32% of the season.
It just, mm-hmm. It really just doesn't even sound valid. So, you know, a 50 game season. Well, last year after 50 games, the champions, the eventual champions, Washington.
That's right.
they were 19-31.
19-31.
You know, So they had to, you know, stage a really desperate comeback, but that was part of their story, and that's what baseball allows. Baseball allows for teams to triumph over the long season. I mean, that's one of the great things about baseball that makes it so different, is that you have this inefficient volume of games. I mean, if you were redesigning it, would you have 162? Probably not, but like, mm-hmm. you know, playing every day for a 6-month season, that grind is part of what makes baseball what it is. So the only thing I can compare this to would be the 1981 season, where when teams came back after the strike in August, they had about 53 games left in the second half, and so the owners just decided to make it a split season, where the second half champion, you know, of each division would get a playoff berth. So, you know, you had a situation where I think Kansas City finished 10 games under 500 in the first half, but they won the second half, so they were in with a sub-500 record. Anyway, the point is that season, that was kind of awarding teams a playoff spot on a 50-game basis, but you still had the first 50 games of the season. And you still had the Dodgers, when they won the World Series, you're able to say, yeah, that team played 108 or 110 games. It was plenty to show that they're the best team in baseball. They earned this. I don't know if we'll look at the champion now, if they do in fact go to 50 games, and say they really earned that flag up there. I guess they earned it better than anybody else, but what does it really mean?
Hmm. Tyler Koepter, national baseball writer for the New York Times, joining the Sliva Show. Tyler, how aware, or maybe they're aware and they just don't care, how aware do you think the owners and the players are that if baseball is not played this season, I'm sure they're not sitting in a closet thinking to themselves, well, let's not gauge what's going to happen long term. Let's not gauge how upset fans would be. What is their thought process long term? Do they just feel, hey, if we don't play this season and we bring baseball back and you go however many months that is without baseball, fans are going to come back. The ones that want to watch baseball are going to continue to want to watch baseball. Do they just have this mindset, this I don't know if arrogance is the right word, when we come back you'll watch?
Yeah, well, there are differences obviously among the owners, but I think in general the institution of Major League Baseball has for years now been so focused on the short term that they really just let the long-term corrosion of their game be a secondary concern. I look at the playoffs, the televising of postseason games, the times that they start are just ridiculous for fans in the East Coast. And then, and fans on the West Coast, like, for example, a few years ago, the Dodgers played Game 7 of the LCS, and they put it on FS1. I mean, they hide That's their right. big events. They're mm-hmm. looking to slash the minor leagues in all these outposts that just, you know, love to have the game and that connection to MLB. They are looking so much at the short term, goals of beating the Union and not taking too much of a bath on this season. When I think the long-term devastation is what they're missing. The one thing they do have, though, is they have a long-term asset, and they know that, you know, as much as fans, complained and as ugly as it was after the strike in 94-95, eventually, after 12 years or so, the attendance did get back, and franchise values continued to rise. And so they did a lot of damage, but if you're sitting on a franchise, you know, you're not going to flip it in a year or two. You know, that's a long-term play. So they probably feel protected by the fact that they have this great game that so many people are going to eventually come back to, because I don't know, as angry as some people might say they are, I don't know how many people are really going to swear off baseball forever, and the owners know that.
Tyler Koepner, national baseball writer for the New York Times, a great article right now in the Times, as baseball squabbles over money, it risks disastrous outcome. You got a chance to connect with a great longtime, obviously, broadcaster Bob Costas. What's his thoughts on the situation? How does he perceive what's happening in baseball?
Yeah, I wanted to talk to Bob. I've known Bob forever, and I wanted to talk to him. He's such a smart guy, and he's seen so much over the years, and he can really articulate his thoughts well. And yeah, I mean, he talked to, you know, we were pretty much in lockstep, my opinions and his, in that, you know, this is there needs to be a greater good that can outweigh the issues of the moment, you know, the issues at the bargaining table, and that the little bit of good that can come out of this awful situation for baseball, you know, for America, would be for baseball, from baseball standpoint, that if they could come back first, and if they could have that stage to, to give fans something to watch and to help the country heal and all that, if you believe in that. Baseball had that opportunity, and they, day by day, they are letting it slip away. And if they blow up the season, if they somehow try to impose the 50 and they just get the sense that it's not even worth it to do that, and they go 17 months without baseball, that's unprecedented, and that's dangerous, and that's it's going to be really, really hard to get the fans back in the same numbers as they were before. Maybe it'll happen eventually, but that's a long, hard slog that they've got in front of them to build back goodwill when they had such a great chance to build it right now.
Yeah, Tyler, it's also, too, it feels like just it's not right. You know, from a fan perspective, you know, you have it inside of you. Like you mentioned, these circumstances are a lot different. I know a lot of people have emphasized this over the last, you know, let's say month or so for baseball. These circumstances are different. If your sport doesn't come back because COVID-19 is continuing to have its effect, or there's a second wave that comes back, that's different. We understand it from, you know, a health perspective, but to just not have it because you couldn't agree, millionaires versus billionaires, that one leaves a very sour taste, I think, in a lot of fans' mouth. But it's up for, you know, it's up to you and me to make sure that we put out these articles or talk about it on the radio, because I think a lot of people have a similar sentiment. I want to just final question. I'll leave it off with this. Can you explain how the playoff side of things can have a big impact? And I just mentioned, there is some fear of potentially a second wave coming in the fall or the winter. What's the significance of the postseason from a financial perspective? And if they were canceled or something along those lines, if you can explain that.
Well, baseball gets a lot of money for the postseason. That's where they make a ton of their money. And yeah, even though ratings aren't what they used to be, the networks still love having live programming that people watch live, you know, that they don't just DVR or stream or whatever. So that's a very, very valuable piece of property. And what they want to do to try to recoup some of that money is to increase the playoffs, to increase it to 14 teams in each league. 14 teams out of the 30 would make the playoffs. There'd be, added wild card rounds and more elimination games and stuff like that. Now that the players do have to approve. So the players could try to hold that up. That is a little bit of leverage they do have. But, to me, I don't know if it cheapens it. I mean, this is going to be a weird year anyway, right? No matter what it's like. I think it kind of cheapens it a little bit. But you know what? Maybe it'll be fun. But that is the one bit of leverage, that and agreeing on the health and safety protocols that the players do have, because while the commissioner can, put in a 50 game schedule if he wants and force them back to work, they can't strike. They don't have that provision, in this agreement. They could try to hold things up by not giving the commissioner the extra revenue that he wants from these extra playoff games. So, there's a lot in play here, and you would have hoped that by June 4th they would have made a whole lot more progress than they have now. And since this is an LA show, I would just say that the LA Dodgers don't usually get a whole lot of sympathy, as a big market team, very successful over the years. But man, I kind of feel like the Dodgers are getting the worst end of this from anybody, because we all know, seven straight division titles. They haven't won it. They had it ripped away from them by the Astros a few years ago. They go all in, get Mookie Betts, David Price, and
they're
now
stacked.
What? So it's such a shame that, the Dodgers, who do so many things right, haven't been able to get over the hump for one reason or another, cheating, Astros, whatever. And now another opportunity might disappear because of this combination of this awful pandemic and this just ridiculous infighting. It's a shame.
Tyler Kepner, national baseball writer for the New York Times. Great article right now in the Times as baseball squabbles over money. It risks a disastrous outcome. Tyler, great insight. Greatly appreciate you doing this. Hopefully next time we have a conversation, we're talking about baseball coming back.
Yeah, let's hope so. I mean, let's hope this is all just posturing and eventually they won't blow up their own sport.
Four-point Lickley, three-pointer by Pippen, no good. Rebound shot. Now you're in control. You're in total control.
All you do now is run almost
all you do.
24.
Run the whole 24 and then take your shot. They'll probably foul you before that. Kobe's down the middle. He's in deep. Throws to Shaq. Strong dunk. The Lakers lead by six. The Los Angeles Lakers with 40 seconds left. Portland to put the champagne away and get out the bottled water, because that's all they're going to drink on their way home. They're down 85-79. A perfect pass from Shaq to Shaq from Kobe. And Kobe, who made the fourth lead point, gets the assist.
Man, does that not take you down memory lane? What a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful call from Chick Hearn and Stu Lance. I told Jess, so this is a 20-year anniversary where the dominance started with Shaq and Kobe. And the Lakers started their reign, three NBA championships, obviously back to back to back. And we have the call. I know there's another call out there. I think it's Bob Costas on the call. I want chicken stew. Every Laker fan wants chicken stew. So the fact that we were able to find it, and it's such a beautiful moment in Lakers history, and one of those two, I mean, just a perfect Chick Hearn call. You can hear the excitement in his voice. You can hear the excitement in Stu Lance's voice. Both of them are thinking in their mind, oh my gosh, we just came back from 16 down. Now we're in a position to win this game. We're going to win the game. And then we're going to go play an Eastern Conference team that, of course, the favorites were always going to come out of the West. You can just feel it in their voice, how excited they were. Staples Center was rocking. Shaq and Kobe, they get past their first humongous obstacle to then eventually win three NBA championships. So 20 years ago today, that happened. 20 years ago today, it was Shaq and Kobe. It's Kobe lob to Shaquille O'Neal and Lakers started. That's one of those. We've had a few of these. The Derek Fisher 0.4 seconds a couple weeks ago we were talking about. The Robert Horry tip out from our man Vlade Divac that perfectly tipped it out to him. The Lakers beat the Sacramento Kings. That's another big-time moment. So we've had some of these moments. But this one, not to take away from how special the other ones were, that Shaq-Kobe connection, that Kobe lob to Shaquille O'Neal will always be remembered in Lakers history as one of the most critical moments in franchise history because it helped them. It got them over the hump, and now they were able to win three championships in a row. So that's obviously a very, very special moment for Laker fans. We're back at it tomorrow, as always. Sliwa Show will start at 6 o'clock with Mason in Ireland. We'll go from 6:30 to 9. Bill Shaken is going to join the show, so we'll continue some of these local baseball conversations. Of course, we'll go heavy on the NBA, as always. And don't forget, starting at 6 a.m. tomorrow, Keyshawn, Travis, and actually it'll be John Ireland filling in for Travis Rogers. So that's what's coming up. L.A., greatly appreciate you tuning in. Have a great rest of your night.